Idam itam iti prayas. Tava yogeshvareshvara. Na vidantyapi yogesha. Yogamayam kutovayam. Idam itam iti prayas. Tava yogeshvareshvara. Kuto vayam. Tava yogeshvareshvara. Na vidantyapi yogesha. Yogamayam kuto vayam. Idam, this, itam, characterized like this, iti, in such terms, praya,
for the most part,
tava, your, yoga ishwara, of the masters of yoga. Ishwara,
O Supreme Master,
na vidanti,
they do not know,
api,
even,
yoga isha,
the masters of yoga,
yoga mayam,
your spiritual power of delusion.
Kuta,
what then of?
Vayam,
us.
Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada.
What to speak of ourselves, O Lord of all perfected yogis? Even the greatest mystics do not know what your spiritual power of delusion is or how it acts.
Translation responsibly.
What to speak of ourselves?
What to speak of ourselves?
O Lord of all perfected yogis,
even the greatest mystics
do not know what your spiritual power of delusion is
or how it acts.
Purport. Systematic understanding of something should include knowledge of both its swarup or essential identity and also its visheshas, the attributes that make it different from other things. Maya, the energy underlying all material existence, is more subtle than ordinary phenomena. Only God and his liberated devotees, therefore, can know its swarup and vishesha.
Omagyan timanandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So Maya is the very difficult thing to understand. How it works and how powerful Maya actually is. Maya is the Lord's shadow, as is described in Brahma Samhita and other scriptures. It is considered to be like the backside of the Lord. It is his energy, in fact.
So therefore, Krishna declares in the Bhagavad Gita, it is very difficult to overcome this maya. Mama maya durachaya. Daivi hesha gunamayi. Daivi. Daivi means divine. Daivi hesha. Guna mayi. Guna mayi means? Yeah, consisting of the three gunas. Gunas means qualities. Prabhupada also explains guna means rope. Just like a rope, in order for a rope to be strong, there has to be three twines within the rope. Right? You get the rope, all right? When you plait something, you get the rope and you use the three twines and then you, right? You plait it together and then it becomes strong, bound like that. Very hard to break, very hard to escape from. Right? So, gunamayi means the three modes. They are like ropes which bind us to the material energy. This is what this is what maya is. Maya consists of the influence of the three modes of material nature. We are bound by goodness, we are bound by passion, and we are bound by ignorance. So, daivihesha means it is divine, means it is coming from God Himself. It is created by Maheshwara, the supreme magician, the all-powerful personality. That's why it is so difficult to cross beyond maya, because the illusion is created by God Himself. Just like, who is the greatest magician in the world these days?
The President of America.
Yeah. He gets credit for everything. Don't give him credit because he gets too much credit. Who is the greatest magician in the world? David Copperfield. Yeah. At least when I...
Houdini.
Yeah, well, he's from the past like that. But in recent times, David Copperfield, greatest magician of modern times like that. I don't know if he still is, but when I was... just joining the movement, then he was the greatest. He was the best. So I saw one time he had an elephant on stage. Right, he's in some hall and there's a big stage, and he brought an elephant into the middle of the stage, a big elephant. It was roaring and like that. And then he put a big curtain up like that, and within 2 seconds he went, and the elephant was gone, right in front of everyone's eyes. There's people all around, everything. Elephant was just gone. Like that. So this is called illusion. Right? It's just an illusion. Right? Magicians, they're illusionists. It's not that he made the elephant disappear. Right? That can happen. But he's not that powerful to do that. We know that. So therefore it is a trick. It's an illusion. Maya means that which is not. It appears to be one thing, but actually it's an entirely different thing. So we thought the elephant disappeared, but the elephant didn't actually disappear because it was an illusion. It appeared to be that he made it disappear, but actually it was just some trick or some illusion like that. So if even a simple human magician, a simple man, can bewilder people so easily and so well, then imagine what Krishna can do. Krishna's illusion or Krishna's maya is insurmountable. Krishna says, mama maya durachaya. It is my maya. Just behold my illusion. Durachaya means very difficult to overcome. Very hard going. And that's the nature of maya. Maya gives you a hard time. Dur. Just like you have Duryodhan. Or Duratma. What does Duratma mean? Yeah, we have Mahatma. Mahatma means?
Great.
A great Maha. Maha Atma. Mahatma means a great soul. Right? And a Duratma means a? Yeah, it means a Duratma. It means a bad soul. Dura. Dura means... it's not good. It's a negative thing. Duratma. Prabhupada says miserly person. Right? Someone who's a duratma. Only thinking about themselves. That is duratma. Like that. And this is Krishna's energy. Krishna says, mama maya My Maya is Dura, Mama Maya. It is Dura. Dura means it is negative. It is hard going. Literally, it means, and just like, who does Krishna put in control of the material energy? Who controls this world? Who is in control? Durga. Durga, Mother Durga, right? She is in control of this material world, and her duty is to give everyone a hard time, right? One of the translations of Durga is hard going. Another name for Durga is prison. When you go to prison, right, it's not going to be a pleasant experience. Although these days they give you a television and a gymnasium and a swimming pool. Yeah, have a holiday. But it's not supposed to be actually a enjoyable experience, right? Durga means hard going, right? The material world is Durga, which means it is hard going. Which means if you look at Mother Durga, if you look at pictures of her, what does she look like?
Scary.
Yeah, scary. Generally, but I'm saying in detail, what does she look like?
Eight arms, right?
And what is, yeah?
She has lots of weapons and she's usually cutting heads off.
Yeah, she has lots of weapons, right? Usually she's riding a lion or a tiger, right? And underneath the lion or the tiger is a demon. And she has eight arms, right, with many weapons, and with a trident, which means like a three-pronged spear with a trident, she is stabbing the demon, right? So the reason she rides a lion or a tiger, what does the lion represent? Just like here in the temple, we have lions. What does the lion represent?
Power.
Power? Yeah.
Unconquerable.
Unconquerable, yeah. A lion represents victory. Just like if a lion walks into the temple courtyard, what does that mean? Right. Very soon he is going to be victorious. That's what it means. As soon as you see him, you know that's victory. Right? You cannot surmount him. So the reason she rides the lion or the tiger, right, is because it means that she will be victorious. Don't try to fight with her. Prabhupada said, one time he said, my only criticism of my disciples is that they do not fear Maya enough. We don't take Maya seriously enough. Right? She's not here to give you an easy time. It's not her job. You can say, well, why is Maya giving me so much trouble? That's her job. Right? She's meant to give you a hard time. You have to take her seriously. Don't compromise. Prabhupada says, Prabhupada used this example of in like a needle, right, out like a plow. That's what Maya's like. She only needs like a little needle to get in, right, and then she's out like a plow. Just like where I'm staying at the farm at New Nundagram, then we have a mice problem. Right? They get in like a needle and then they just wreck the whole house. Right? They just come in their little hole, right? You can't even see where they're going to get in. Or even better than the mice or the termites. Right? They just come in like a little crack and then they can destroy everything. Yeah? This is what Maya is like. You just give her an inch, she will take a mile. The example is given, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, my spiritual master, gave the example of riding on an Indian train. You're sitting on the seat. You know, you have the seat. So you've got your spot on the seat, right? And then the train stops at the station and one Mataji comes on. A big Mataji. And she comes on and she gives you that look. No. Can you please let me have a little room? So naturally you say okay. So then you move across a little bit and she sits down. Right? But then as the hours go by, somehow she keeps moving in, right? And then you're going like further and further down the seat. Right? And then she brings her eight kids. Right? And then they start coming. You know, and every time she gets an inch, she puts one of the kids down. Start moving. And then next minute, you know, within 4 hours, you're off the seat. Right? That is Maya. She only needs 1 inch. You give her an inch, she will take everything. You just compromise a little bit in your Krishna consciousness, Maya will take you away. We've seen it happen so many times to devotees, right? They just give one little inch, they just make a little compromise with Maya, and then years later, they're well away in Maya's territory. That's how powerful she is. So she rides on the lion and the tiger to represent. She will be victorious. And then she carries the trident, right? The trident represents three prongs, right? This means, how does she subjugate us? How does she control us? She controls us by the three modes of material nature, right? Goodness, passion, and ignorance. She constantly, all day long, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the three modes are constantly battling for supremacy. You see the three modes constantly. Right? Mode of goodness comes for some time. Then during the day, mode of passion overcomes you. The mode of ignorance overcomes you. And then you get back into the mode of passion. Right? And once in a while you go into the mode of goodness. Right? And then constantly fighting for supremacy. Right? So that is how she subjugates everyone. That's how she controls everyone with the three modes. Also, she controls us with past, with time. Time means past, present, and future. Right? Mode of goodness means the present. If you want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, you have to practice Krishna consciousness from the platform of the mode of goodness, which means you have to be in the present. Just like when you're chanting your japa, which is our most important service, you have to be in the mode of goodness, which means you have to be in the present. You have to be listening to the mantra now. So much of our mental energy is taken up by past and future, which is under the control of ignorance and passion. Right? Ignorance is the past, right? Passion is the future. Right? So because our minds are so much under the modes of ignorance and passion, we spend so much of our mental energy thinking about the past when we're under the influence of the mode of ignorance. Oh, you know, and if you listen to all the songs on the radio, right? I used to have her. Yeah? She was once mine. But now I have nothing and my life is not divine. Slime. Not sublime. I used to. Oh yeah, or you could say, yeah. If you're a little bit advanced, then you say, I used to have her. She used to be mine. Now I do not have her. My life is sublime. But not many people will buy that record. But you can do it. So that is the nature, right? People are always lamenting about the past. Right? That is under the influence of the mode of ignorance. So much of our mental energy, we're thinking, oh, why couldn't it have been like that? Why wasn't it like that? Why didn't I get that? Why didn't I take that opportunity? If you're chanting your japa, but you're thinking about all this nonsense, hands up if you sometimes do that. 100% unanimous, big problem. That's not good. We waste so much of our mental energy. Right, when we could be in the present chanting the holy names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. If you want to chant, you have to chant now. Right? You don't make advancement by chanting your rounds tomorrow. Right? You can only live for so long in the rounds that you chanted yesterday. Right, it's the rounds you chant today. It's the service you do today. It's being in the present. It's being in the mode of goodness. That's how you make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Right, and so much of our mental energy is thinking about the future. What will I have? That's the mode of passion. Passion means, Krishna says in the Gita, unlimited desires. That's the mode of passion. Right, if you get in the mode of passion, the desires don't stop. Right? It's not that, okay, I fulfill a few of my desires and that's it, I'm satisfied now. It just keeps going and going and going. Prahlad Maharaj said to Hiranyakashipu, his father, he said, my dear father, best of the demons, he said, you have conquered everyone in this universe, but you have not conquered your greatest enemy. Who is our greatest enemy? yeah, lust, so many different ways. But he says, in this case, he says, you have not controlled your mind. Right? Your mind is not controlled, right? Because if the mind is in the mode of passion, right, then your desires will be unlimited. It will never stop. And then that's what we spend so much of our mental energy thinking about. What will I have in the future? When I have a nice wife. When I have a nice husband. Right? When I have a nice this, when I have a nice that, when I have... And then so much of our time is thinking. It may or may not ever come. How do you know it will come? People spend their whole time talking about the future. Oh, I will do this in the future. I will do that in the future. It may or may not come. You may get it. You may not get it. You may get it, what you want, what you're always thinking about, but it may not be what you thought it was when you got it. When you eventually attain, how many times has that happened to you? Right, you thought about something, thought about something, thought about something, and finally you get it and you think, oh, that's all it is. That is the material energy. So therefore, one has to be in the mode of goodness. One has to be in the present. So this is the way Durga controls us. Past, present and future. Through time, through the modes of nature. And then through the different kleshas. What are the different kleshas? What does klesh mean? What is klesh? Suffering. Yeah. So then, klesha. What sort of kleshas are there? Adi Baltic, Adi Daivik, and Adhyatmik. What does this mean? Adi Daivik means? Devas. Yeah, the demigods. Suffering brought by the devas. Then, Adi Baltic means? Other. The Baltic means Bhutas. Bhuta means person. Right, Bhuta. We say ghost, but also it means person. So Adi Baltic means other people or other living entities. Does other living entities sometimes give you problems? Right. And then Adi Yatmik. Atma means, Atma can mean body, it can mean mind, it can mean intelligence, it can also mean soul. Like that. It means your own, the problems you get from yourself. Right. This is how Maya or Durga gives us problems. This is how she keeps us controlled. This is our kleshas. Adi Daivik means from the devas, from the demigods. Just like you saw in the last 2 or 3 weeks, how much damage the demigods can do if they desire, right? If they're displeased, right? Earthquake in China, 60,000 people dead, like that, right? Demigods are displeased, 60,000 just gone. Insignificant. It's just like for demigods, it's like stamping on ants. Right? Not even problematic. You know, we're so proud, we think, oh, I'm so, you know, powerful and everything. Demigods, if they become displeased, then gone. Right? And then in Burma, right? Maybe 100,000 people dead. Cyclone. And Vayu. Vayu is the lord of the wind. Right? Don't displease him. See what he can do, right? The cyclone was so powerful in Burma, it changed the shape of the coastline. Right, that's a power. Imagine a cyclone came in here, right? And so powerful, the actual coast changed. You know, the wind was blowing so powerfully, right? It would just be horrifying, right? This is what the devas can do, right? This is how Maya keeps us under subjugation, right? And then Bhutas, or Baltic, means other living entities, right? Everyone in this world gives you problems. Government gives you problems, right? Family members give you problems. Friends give you problems. Enemies give you problems, right? Insects give you problems, right? Who doesn't give you a problem in this world? Right? That's the nature of the material energy. And then, Adi Yatmik. Atma means problems which come from our own mind and body. Right? We've got so much problem with our own mind and body, we don't even need the other two. Right? We don't even need the other living entities and the demigods to get involved. We're already disturbed enough. Right? Nature of Kali Yuga, Shukadeva Goswami says in the beginning of the... Suta Goswami says in the beginning of the Bhagavatam that in the age of Kali, everyone is short-lived, short memory, short lifespan, right? So many problems. And he says, above all, always disturbed. Right? You just give our mind and our body, that's enough to keep us always disturbed. Our bodies are always giving us problems, right? And our minds are always disturbed in the age of Kali. Right? So this is how she keeps us under control. Through the three modes of nature, through time, through the three types of kleshas. So, Mama Maya Dharachaya. Krishna says that the nature of Maya is she is very difficult to control. Therefore, Prabhupada says that you must take Maya seriously. In other words, Prabhupada said, my criticism of my disciples is that they do not fear Maya enough. We have to be fearful of Maya. Prabhupada says it is good to have a healthy pessimism in spiritual life. Right? Devotees have healthy pessimism. We are negative towards the material world. Right? People may say to us, why are you negative towards the material world? It's such a nice place. Right? So many nice songs on the radio say that it's a nice place. What was that song from the late 60s? He said, I sing to myself, what a wonderful world. What did he say in that song? It's a very funny song. He said, I see the trees are green, red roses too, and I sing to myself, I love you. And then I sing to myself, what a wonderful world. Right? That's why he was walking down the street, and that was just before the piano fell on his head. He was singing that song. Because that's the material world. You think it's good, you just wait. You think it's good? Yeah, maybe it's good. You just wait. Just stick around for a few more days. The nature of the material energy, we have to understand it is something different to what it appears. So therefore, the Sanskrit name for the material energy is Maya. Maya means that which is not. It appears to be one thing, but actually it's another thing. What does it appear to be? Appears to be what? Yeah, appears to be nice, appears to be good. Yeah, Krishna says in the Gita, right? It appears to be nectar, but it actually is the source of poison. Krishna says that is pleasure in the mode of passion. The mode of passion, and this is especially between boys and girls, right? It appears to be good, right? But it turns out to be poison. It appears to be nectarian. Oh, and when I have this girl, when I have this boy, it will be nectar. So Krishna says, yes, nectar in the beginning, but long-term, poison. You just have a few relationships in this world with the opposite sex, and then you get it worked out pretty quickly. Right. Nectar in the beginning, but poison in the end, every time. That is the nature. So Maya means that which is not. It appears to be one thing. So Maya appears to be eternal. That is the nature of Maya. It appears like all of this will just go on forever. That's how people actually think. Right? People are not actually planning for death. Right? They plan for everything else. Right? They plan for old age, for retirement, they have a superannuation fund. Right? When we get old, then I'll have money, I'll have security. So all the plans are being made. But where is the plan for death? Right. Even on television, in the midday, when old people are at home watching television, they have advertisements now where you can plan your own funeral. Right? Okay, so plan your own funeral, so that means you know you're going to die. So if you're going to die, what are you doing about it? Right? Oh yeah, that's going to happen, but I'll just enjoy myself now. And you see old people, how embarrassing it is when you see an old person try to enjoy like a young person. Right? Have you ever seen the old men? Like you go to a holiday destination, you see the old men wearing the Hawaiian shirts. Yeah, they wear Hawaiian shirts and they put on their long shorts, right? And they walk around in their sandals and they're walking around like, yeah, I'm the man, I'm like 20 years old, yeah, I'm enjoying myself. You know? I'm like, and he's like this 90-year-old guy, you know, who's, you know, shriveling away. But in his mind, he's thinking, yeah, I'm young, yeah, I'm attractive, I can enjoy the opposite sex, right? The weather's beautiful, you know, I'm in Hawaii, I'm enjoying myself now. So he is thinking, yes, I will enjoy. But that is not the nature of the material energy. It appears to be eternal, Like, we can enjoy unlimitedly here. But the nature of it is temporary. Life is actually not that long. Right? How long do we live for on this earth? What's the average lifespan? Right? Of a man in Australia? Right? And a woman in Australia? I think the average lifespan is 76 and 78. Average. Like, some live longer, some live shorter. Like that. That's not a long time. Yeah? What are you doing about it? Right? Just like it happens to many of us when we go to join the Hare Krishna movement, we take to like a spiritual way of life, then our relatives say to us, you can do that when you're old. No? But now you should enjoy yourself. When you're old, you can get into spiritual life. My mother said that to me. I said to my mother, I'm going to become a Hare Krishna. And she said, you can do that when you're old. Yeah? Enjoy life now. Experience life now. But I was 19 when I joined, and I thought, you know, what I've already had in the last 4 years, from 15 to 19, that's enough. Yeah, what am I going to enjoy, Mum? All right? She said to me, she said, go to Jamaica. She said, go to the Caribbean. Then you can enjoy. Now, what's the difference there? All right? The only difference there is the weather's better. That's the only difference. Right? Go and enjoy there. But where's the enjoyment? You're going to go through the same suffering that you go through everywhere else. So therefore, we want to relieve ourselves from our suffering once and for all. Nature of the material energy is everyone becomes very illusioned. Just like there's one story that I think it was Shivaram Swami was telling, very unfortunate story, that a whole family from Brazil, their life dream was to take a family holiday to Hawaii. So they saved up their money for years and years and years. Right? And finally, they had all their money and they went on their dream holiday to Hawaii. Right? And they got to Hawaii, and on the 13th story of a huge, you know, big high-rise hotel, they got like the luxury suite, 13th story up there on the top, you know, beautiful, seeing the whole way. So they got to Hawaii for their holiday, got up there, everything was there, and then it started to rain. And it rained and rained and rained and rained and rained for 2 weeks, non-stop. And when it rains in Hawaii, it like rains. Like, yeah, monsoon just rains. And they got so depressed, the entire family jumped off the balcony of the 13th story. What was life for? Right? Their whole life was for enjoying their life's dream of having a family holiday in Hawaii. Right? And when they got there, there was nothing there for them. Right? They couldn't enjoy in any way, shape or form. They thought, what is life about? Jumped off. Out of desperation. Right? So what is the point of our movement? What is the point of the ISKCON movement of Krishna consciousness? The point is to save the conditioned souls. Because everyone is drowning in the ocean of the material energy. Just like we used to have that painting down at Crossways, big one on the wall. Everyone's seen that? Where the Sankirtan, the ship or the boat of the Sankirtan movement is sailing across the ocean of Kali Yuga. And you see underneath the waves, everyone's seen that painting? Right? You've seen it's in the theatre? Yeah. You see underneath the waves all the vices of Kali. Illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, all the negative activities taking place. And then you see up on the boat Srila Prabhupada, who is the captain of the boat, right? And he is guiding the ship across the ocean of Kali. And all the devotees, their job is to pull everyone out of the ocean, everyone who is suffering in the ocean, to pull them out and to bring them onto the boat, right? And then to hold on tightly and to go across the ocean to the other side and go on entire on the sails. How do we cross the ocean? Right? By Sankirtan. By congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna. That's how we go across the ocean. Right? Now you have to understand that we're on the boat now. And the whole purpose of our life is to bring other people onto the boat. That is the whole purpose. To bring as many people onto the boat as possible. Right? ISKCON is meant for preaching. Prabhupada says it is the family business. Just like if you have a family, just like in India, you have Mr. Patel and sons. or Mr. Gandhi and Sons. Right? It's the family business. Right? I remember, like, I've been into Vrindavan before. You go into like a cloth shop to buy some dhotis or something, and there's this 5-year-old boy sitting there, and his father's, you know, gone to the bathroom or something, sitting there on the shop, in the floor of the shop, 5-year-old boy, and he's running the family business. You walk in there and he goes, "Yes." And you say, "I want some dhotis." He goes, "What type?" Like that. And you say, "I want some cotton dhotis." He goes, "How much do you want to spend?" Like that. Right? Running the family business. It's the family business. Right? It's what you do. My father did it. His father did it. His father did it. This is what we do. In ISKCON, right, this is our family business, is preaching. Prabhupada said it is the business of everyone in this movement to bring everyone else in this world, all the conditioned souls, and put them on the boat of the Sankirtan movement under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada. Right? So all of us have to see, what is our contribution? What are we doing to help the other conditioned souls come back home, back to Godhead, to get the same fortune as ourselves? Now you have to understand, when you're on the boat, it's not that the boat ride is going to be smooth sailing. Just because you're in ISKCON now, just because you're a devotee now, just because you've got tilak on your forehead, just because you say Hari Bol, right? It doesn't mean that everything's smooth sailing now. Right? You have to be very diligent to stay on the boat. Sometimes devotees become bewildered. Just like, what do we say when a devotee leaves the movement? They bloop. Right? If someone leaves, we say they bloop. Right? Who made up that word? Just like in ISKCON, we have our words, right? What are our words? Right? Nectar? Puffed up? Yeah. Puffed up? Nectar, puffed up.
Rascals.
What? Transcendental, yeah.
Rascals.
Rascals, yeah. Spaced out, yeah. Yeah, mental. Someone's mental. They're mental. Fringy. Yeah, someone's a fringy. Yep. Fried. Fried. Right. We've got our words. Right? You've got to be a devotee to understand what we're talking about. Right? Everyone else looks as they think, what are these guys talking about? You know? Man, that guy was so mental today, they're fried. Right? I'm fried with that guy. He's so mental today. You know, so spaced out. Right? Puffed up, bucked up, you know, like that. Right? We've got our own words, right? So bloop is one of our words, right? And where did that one come from? Right? It came from Prabhupada himself. You know? Prabhupada says, sometimes the devotees, they're on the boat of ISKCON. And sometimes they look over the ocean and they see there's so much enjoyment in the material world. And then the devotee thinks, let me go back into the material world. I'll make a big splash. Right? I'm back. Here I am. I'm back in the material world. And Prabhupada says, they go, bloop. Right? Just go to the material, bloop. And then, smashed by the waves of the material energy. And after being smashed for a long time, then what happens? Right? Then you crawl back up the side of the boat. Right, wet and battered, right, and all the devotees pull you back on, right, and they say, Prabhu, what happened? And you say, I got into Maya. Please don't let me go again. That is the way to stay safe. You have to stay safe in this movement by always taking the association of the devotees. Don't ever let the devotees out of your sight. Otherwise, you might bloop. Right, everyone's taking rest in the middle of the night on the boat. Right, everyone's resting. And you go off on the side of the boat, look over. Okay, no one's looking. Right, bloop. But then you're just going to be smashed by that material energy. Right, and then you're going to have to come back up again. Don't let yourself go off. Let the devotees always hang on to you. Because if the devotees see you going, they will grab you and they'll say, hey, where are you going? Right? Our movement was so intense in the 70s. Now it's a bit different. Now it's like, you know, when someone's starting to have trouble in the material energy. You see them gradually kind of going out, and then kind of gradually, it's like a gradual kind of. But our movement was so intense in the 70s, Korma Prabhu was telling me, because the Brahmachari Ashram used to be up there in the Prasadam Hall back in the 70s. He said that everyone had their lockers. They had kind of had partitions and they made rooms, and everyone had different rooms and devotees sharing different rooms. And they all had lockers. He said if someone blooped in the 70s, he said what would happen is that you'd take rest at night and you'd wake up in the morning, the locker was just cleared out and they were gone. That's how someone would bloop, because there was so much pressure from all the other devotees. If someone was even talking about leaving, there was so much, come on, don't leave. Right? How could you leave? Don't leave Krishna. Now it's different. You know, if a devotee wants to change ashram, or if a devotee wants to gradually get himself in a more comfortable position so he can fight with Maya, then that is supported. But back in those days, the devotees could not understand there was any other way. They just thought everyone was just fully surrendered to Krishna. That was the only way to serve Krishna. And that's not the only way to serve Krishna. But the point is that we have to protect the devotees. If we see a devotee struggling or having trouble, then we have to protect them. Keep them in our association. Make sure that devotee does not leave. Right? Even if they need to get themselves in a situation where they can fight Maya better, but not leave Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gives the example in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam of Gajendra fighting the crocodile. So Prabhupada says, some people are better at living in the water, fighting in the water, some people are better fighting on the land. Just like Gajendra, the elephant, he could defeat the crocodile if he was on the land. But when he was in the crocodile's territory, in the water, the crocodile could defeat him. So Prabhupada used that analogy to make us understand that some people are better in the renounced ashram. Some people are better as brahmacharis or sannyasis, and some are better as grihasthas. Some are better fighting Maya on the land. Some are better fighting Maya on the water. Whichever ashram you're in, but you have to continue to fight Maya. And we have to protect ourselves and make sure we never leave the association of the devotees. And we have to make sure other devotees do not leave. Prabhupada says you have to spill gallons of blood to make one devotee. So he said, what is the loss when one devotee leaves? So rare that someone is made into a devotee. So if you see someone struggling, you have to help them. That's the only way we're going to protect our movement, protect our society. So Maya is very powerful, as it is spoken of here. And in order to overcome Maya, then we have to stay very strict in our spiritual practices. And we have to create a very strong bond between Vaishnavas, so that the devotees always feel protected. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Beginning you're talking about the Brahma Samhita, talks about Maya.
Being the shadow.
Yeah, the shadow of the inverted reflection of the seed of the mundane feminine energy, the chit potency, the samadhi potency. What's that mean?
Chit potency means spiritual energy. Chit means spirit.
Yeah.
Chit means consciousness. So chit shakti means the spiritual energy.
Is it to do with passion? Is it to do with passion or knowledge? Like that chit?
Satchit Ananda, going into goodness, passion, and ignorance. Mm-hmm. Like that. I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that in the... what's it called? I think it's called the Krishna Samhita. There's one book. It's probably up in the shop. And he explains there is some correlation between Pladini, Sandini, and Sambit.
And
the three modes, but I can't remember what they're.
Right. So this Sambit potency, the chit potency of Maya, what's that?
Of Maya?
Well, yeah, it says it's a verbal reflection of the shadow of the sea, of the mundane feminine energy, the chit potency.
The way we understand is that Maha Maya, this is explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Navadvip Dharma Mahatmya. He says that Maha Maya is the expansion of Yoga Maya. Or in other words, the material energy is an expansion of the spiritual energy. She has her original form in this spiritual world, like that. So that's the way we understand her. So she's divine in the sense that her original form is Yogamaya, And then when she expands into the material world, then she takes the form of Mahamaya or Durga.
It's a reflection.
Yeah, of that original spiritual form. In the Navadvipa Mahatmya, Maya, Mahamaya, she comes to Krishna, she comes to Lord Chaitanya, and she says to him, she says, "I don't like my service." You know, sometimes devotees come to the temple president or to the authority, they say, "I don't like my service," which is fair enough. Sometimes, you know, we may not like the service that we're doing. So she said, "I don't like my service. My service is to keep everyone away from you. So I'm not really enjoying my service." Just like, you know, imagine if our service was to keep everyone away from the temple. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone's trying to walk into the temple and we're at the front gate going, "Don't go in there. You know, they're all crazy. You know, come. Well, that it wouldn't be a nice service to do. For a devotee wouldn't enjoy it. But that's her service. But Lord Chaitanya said to her, he said, "Do not worry." He said, "In your original form, in the spiritual world, you are Yogamaya. So you assist all the devotees in coming closer to me." So that's how she maintains her mental equilibrium, or her ability to keep doing her function in the material world. Because she understands in the spiritual world she has a different function like that. So that's how we understand the relationship. So. Any other points?
My greatest relief came even from a little imagery of ISKCON, you know, which was the material universe can be shrunk to the size of a telescope, you know, and you can reach the Lord. And I was just wondering if you'd comment on that. And in times of difficulty, I was chanting, had only imagined that, you know, Krishna in the spiritual world.
Yeah, the Bhagavad Gita says that for a devotee, the whole ocean of the material energy shrinks down to the size of a calf's hoofprint. Like that. So it means if you're taking shelter of Krishna, then you feel that you can easily cross the material energy. It's not difficult to cross. And we were discussing in the Bhagavatam last night, the end of the 25th chapter in the third canto in the Bhakti Vaibhav course. Then Lord Kapiladev says that if you surrender to me sincerely, then I will deliver you from the ocean of birth and death. Like that. So we were discussing that point. So it means that, and Prabhupada indicated this, and different devotees indicated this, that if we give our whole life to serving Krishna, then even if we're not perfect, but if we sincerely give our whole life to surrendering to Krishna and serving Him, even if we're not perfect at the time of death, Krishna will deliver us. He'll cover all of the imperfections and He'll deliver us. Like that. So that's what Lord Kapiladev guarantees in the end. And Prabhupada said Krishna guarantees that in the Bhagavad Gita. Like that. So that is our philosophy, our understanding. Like that, so.
One comment on the
sharing
point. Here Prabhupada also said that if you serve a pure devotee, whatever the defects you have got, they are all vanished completely by Krishna's mercy. Serving a pure devotee, those things. If we take a spiritual master and serve him, then we will be like, same, we get what Lord Krishna is.
Yeah. By Prabhupada's mercy, then everyone has been delivered. That's an important point.
You know that picture you're talking about in the tree, just one person in New Zealand, and I was just doing that book, was so attracted to the picture.
Which picture? Have to put it on their back.
Yeah.
Wouldn't fit anywhere else. Yeah, my brother's got Arjuna and Krishna tattooed on his back. Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Anyway.
A question about people who leave Krishna consciousness. I heard somewhere that Sri Prabhupada said, and it's true, that there's a certain percentage if their heart is going to be powerful. Can you speak a bit about that?
Yeah, Prabhupada said that when someone leaves the temple, he said then we should feel there's 50% their fault and 50% our fault. So in other words, sometimes you see when devotees are struggling, and we should never do this, that when a devotee is struggling, or even when they leave, sometimes devotees begin to criticize them. They put all the blame on them. Oh, they didn't do that, and they didn't do this, and this is why they left, and they did so many negative things. But that wasn't Prabhupada's mood. And sometimes devotees do that, and that's wrong. Right? Prabhupada said it's 50% their fault, but we should be looking 50% at ourselves. What did we not do? What did we not provide? What was our lacking? How didn't we keep it? Because if the temple's so nice, why would anyone want to leave? Right? Even the temple may be so nice, but people will leave. But if we make Krishna consciousness such a nice experience, then it'll be very difficult for people to leave. So Prabhupada's mood was that when someone left, we take 50% of the blame. And that's how devotees should feel. Not that, you know, they blame other devotees and criticize other devotees and say when they left, well, you know, that was their defect. No, we should always be compassionate. The first quality of a devotee is compassion. When Lord Chaitanya teaches the 26 qualities of the devotee to Sanatana Goswami, he says, Kripalu Akrita Droha. Right? The second quality, which usually we say is the most important quality of the Vaishnava, is
humility.
Akrita Droha. Right? So normally we say humility is the most important quality of a Vaishnava. But Mahaprabhu says, the first quality he mentions, even before humility, he says Kripalu, which means compassion. He says that is the first quality of the Vaishnava. Devotees have to be compassionate. We have to be compassionate to other devotees. Prabhupada, it is said we can be strict on ourselves, but we must always be lenient with others to help them become. So that should be our mood. Our mood should not be that we blame others when they are going through difficulties. Yeah, if you see someone struggling, then help them. Yeah, if you see someone about to fall over a cliff, grab them. If you see someone, you know, about to touch fire, stop them. Yeah, that's the nature of a devotee. You know, so if we see a devotee, if we see another devotee is struggling, then we should immediately be helping them. Always looking over the other devotees, making sure, is everyone okay? Right, someone's struggling, immediately go to them. What's wrong? What can I do to help? What adjustments can we make? Devotees need to feel protected. If they feel sheltered, they won't take shelter outside. If they don't feel shallow, then they'll go somewhere else. Even when we provide everything, some devotees might leave that way. Yeah, because then why did we leave the spiritual world? Right? But the point is, we should make everything so nice that people won't want to leave. Is that okay? Yeah. Someone else had their hand? No.
Good. When you're trying to make a point you're making about if you sincerely serve Krishna, then you'll go through the defects. I was thinking that it sounds similar to where Christian philosophy is, where, you know, where the sins of giving sins in the grave in any way. You might have some Christian that says sincerely serving God, but they still have mess or something. How does that work?
Prabhupada says the highest that the Christians can go is the heavenly planets. That's the highest they can go. That's as far as you can go in that religion. Like that. The best they get is the mode of goodness. Like that. It's not transcendental. When Lord Chaitanya is speaking to the Chankazi in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when he has the conversation, Lord Chaitanya points out that the Quran, which is what all the Muslims are following, he says it is a scripture under the three modes of material nature. And the Bible's the same. It's under the three modes of material nature. Very much dealing with the mode of goodness. Like that, but not fully transcendental. Not like Gita or Bhagavatam. It's not that kind of a scripture. You don't get the same enlightenment that you get from reading the Bible or the Quran. You get something, you know, because it's divinely inspired, no doubt. You know, Prabhupada said holy Bible. Right? It's obviously a divine scripture. It uplifts people, but it's not on the level of the Bhagavatam or the Gita. Like that. So the highest they will get is heavenly planets, Prabhupada says. But if you want to transcend the material world, then you have to go a lot higher. Just like we had the Sunday feast at the farm a few weeks ago, and we had some Christians come from a Bible college, three young people. They were studying the Bible, so they came to look at a comparative religion. And, you know, we had a nice conversation, and they asked nice questions, and they were very favourable. to the whole experience. But near the end of our conversation, I started like going in there a little deeper with them, kind of like pushing them a little bit just to see what their actual conceptions were. And when I began to push them a little bit or go in a little deeper, then you could see that the conception of religion was materialistic. But basically, their conception was God is meant to provide our enjoyment. You know, he's our father and he's meant to provide our enjoyment and take away our suffering. That was actually their conception. But that's not the Vaishnava conception. That's not the Bhagavatam conception. The Bhagavatam conception is whether you handle me roughly by your embrace or make me brokenhearted by not being present before me, still I'm your servant, birth after birth. But their conception was that, and that's kind of why it's materialistic, it's religion, but it's materialistic religion, is that I will serve you, I will love you, but you have to provide this much for me and you have to get rid of all this stuff for me. Right, and then that's materialistic, right? Does that answer what you're? Yeah. I think so. Any other points? Did you put your hand up? No.
One comment was that I've spoken to a number of church ministers about it, and they're also able to say the concept that God is unknowable, or not necessarily that he doesn't have quality of something to believe in, but he's so far away that we couldn't. You can't have his qualities. You couldn't get to know his qualities. So in some sense there's that avoidance of God's qualities and Krishna's qualities, and therefore that makes it not necessarily impossible, but makes it difficult for them to actually form a relationship with God. Another question I wanted to ask was, you know, I think I can recall reading somewhere that it says that if you desire to stay in the material world, then even Lord Chaitanya can't say this.
Yeah, because that's the point. The point is, Prabhupada does make that statement that if someone desires to stay in the material world, then even God cannot deliver them. So that's different to trying your best to serve Krishna your whole life and yet falling short to some degree. But you know, the essence of your desire is to serve Krishna. Whereas if the essence of your desire is to stay in the material world and enjoy, then even Krishna can't deliver you. He wants to deliver you, but he's examining the heart. What is the innermost motive? What's the innermost motive? So we have to examine in our consciousness, what's our innermost desire? Is it actually to serve Krishna, birth after birth? Or is it to enjoy the material world? I'll serve Krishna, but still my prominent desire is to enjoy. Like that. So Krishna will examine. But if the prominent desire is to serve Krishna, then even if some lacking is there, Krishna says, I will cover and I'll take you back. You did your best. But if your desire is to enjoy the material world, then if that's the principal desire, then even Krishna can't deliver you. It's not that he can't, he can, but he won't.
So if you were executing all your duties perfectly, but you felt that you wanted to stay, then you would get delivered. But if you were performing all your duties, maybe not perfectly, but you were trying your best, and even if but you didn't.
Yeah, because the point is that Krishna fulfills your desires. That's how Krishna receives, he fulfills your desires. So it's you who wants to stay in the material world, so Krishna fulfills it. Right, if you want to go back to the spiritual world, Krishna fulfills that. But if you want to stay in the material world, then he'll fulfill that. I think so.
Slightly about that, is there a bit of the own duty imperfectly and someone else's perfectly?
In the 18th chapter, yeah. The Gaudiya, there's a slope.
So it's okay to do, as long as you're doing your duty.
That's a different point. Right. It's like a different concept. So. Any other questions or comments?
One comment. If you want to enjoy the material world, there is no way anybody can. And like that man in Austria, that old man, he kept his daughter for 24 years. Yeah,
don't even speak about that.
Very terrible.
Yeah, it's, you can't even mention those things. They're too demoniac. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.